Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. At first glance, the Irish potato famine of 1846 is an unlikely setting for a romance novel. But for Wauwatosa's Pamela Ford, the Great Famine gave her a rich historical setting in which to set her fictional characters.
In her latest book, To Ride a White Horse, all the usual romance suspects are there. A dashing hero, a determined and beautiful heroine, mixed signals, family disapproval, smoldering passion. But the facts that serve as the novel's foundation are all too real, and they help make the story greater than the sum of its parts. However, Ford told me that she didn't plan to set her story during the famine.
What I did set out to do was write an Irish love story. And as I researched the entire 1800s in Ireland, I realized that there was an awful lot about the Irish potato famine that I knew nothing about. And as I got deeper into researching, I realized that the story I wanted to tell was going to be much greater than just a love story. It was going to be about a family and about survival and a young woman who would be forced to leave her country to find work and send money home to save her family. And so it became a much bigger story as I learned more about what was involved during the Irish potato famine.
It was a really tough time in Ireland. What did you learn that you didn't already know? I think we all know that the potatoes failed and that people were starving. But beyond that, what did you learn in your research?
Well, with potatoes in particular, one of the things that was shocking to me was why the Irish are known for eating potatoes and why they were surviving on potatoes. And it's because when England conquered Ireland in the 1600s and basically took all of the land from the Irish Catholics and gave it to Protestants, the Irish were forced to rent small plots of land back from the English to feed their families. And the only crop that would put forth enough fruit basically to feed a family for a year was potatoes. And so it was by default that they became potato farmers.
And potatoes weren't even native there. I mean, potatoes are New World crops that were brought back.
Well, and the interesting thing is that the potato famine actually hit all of Europe, and it also hit Scotland. But because those cultures were not so dependent on potatoes for survival, it didn't affect the country like it affected Ireland. In 1846, when the potato crop failed for the second time, almost the entire crop failed, and because they had had a partial failure in 1845, they went into immediate famine. There just wasn't any food. There was cattle and oats and wheat and all of that sort of thing that the Irish were growing in Ireland, and the English continued to export all of that out of the country while the Irish were starving. And the English weren't having any issues with having enough food to eat. They didn't need to export this out, and yet they still did.
And that plays a crucial part in this story, the fact that the English were not allowing any of this to stay in the country and that people literally were starving to death.
Right. There were a number of different attitudes in England. One of them was very religious. God sent the famine, so who are we to intervene? And then there were others, the man who headed up the very minor relief effort that the English put into place, he actually came out and said, the famine is an effective means of reducing surplus population and that it would be a good means of breaking the cancer of dependency. So while the English actually drove the Irish into this position where they couldn't feed their families in the first place by taking their land and forcing them to rent back these small plots, then they later came back and said, oh, and look, you're not taking care of yourselves.
The attitude toward the Irish finds its way in your book in the New World as well, because once our heroine moves, and we should probably name her Kathleen,
right,
when she actually finds her way, and there's an amazing story about how she finally gets to America, but she gets to Boston and finds that no Irish need apply
right
everywhere.
Right.
And the attitudes have somehow just transmitted across the Atlantic that they're lazy and that they are feckless and there's absolutely nothing good to come from them. And she somehow convinces in a small way that that's not true. But I think we forget that that attitude was prevalent here as well.
Right. America was – remember, we were colonized by the English, so that we were very Protestant in America at that time. So when the Irish were coming across, these were the Irish Catholics who were displaced. So the Protestants in America were not happy to see all of these Catholics coming across the ocean, let alone these lazy Irish who they actually thought were ignorant and uneducated. And they actually were uneducated because the English would not allow them to further themselves in Ireland. So there was a huge amount of prejudice, and it was virtually no Irish need apply. There was not a future for them in many places in America initially.
So when you sat down, as you said, you weren't planning to mm-hmm. do this. The story wasn't going to be that big when you first started. How did you balance getting the history in and still telling the romantic story that's the thread that's through right. all of that history, the personal thing that we as readers grab onto and say, it's these people that I care about in this background? So was that a difficult balancing act for you?
In places, there were times where people who were readers for me would say, okay, pull back on this whale killing section.
Yes. There's whale killing as well. There's a whale hunting. There's a yeah. whale ship. Yes.
And it's fascinating. For me, with history, I start researching and then I just get fascinated with what I'm reading. And then it's like fingers that are opening up and I go off following this finger and I'm like, wow, that's wonderful. And then I go off in this direction and wow, that's wonderful. And I want to share all of this with my readers because I get so engrossed and fascinated with what I'm reading. So it is actually a really big balancing act. And one of the things that people will say, well, how did you choose whaling or how did you choose Boston? And it's like each piece feeds into the next piece. So I decided I wanted to write about Ireland and I wanted a young woman to leave her country. And then I wanted another ship involved in the story. And I wanted the captain to be young enough, and I had to find a type of shipping that a young man could be a captain. And so I started looking, and I realized that in the whaling industry, there were young men who became whaling masters at age 22 even. So I thought, okay, I can have a late 20s hero, and he can be a whaling master. So then if he's a whaling master, well, what port is he going to be working out of? Not every port in the United States had whaling. So now I was settling in on, okay, it's Massachusetts. Where in Massachusetts? Okay, Boston. And so each thing kind of led into the next thing, and then it led into another round of research. And Boston was a wonderful setting for the story in America because of, not to give it away, but what happens in Boston in response to the famine in Ireland.
And a lot of Irish Catholics came
right,
to Boston,
right.
and they're a major part of, you
right.
know, their ancestors right. are a major
right.
part of Boston today.
Right. Yeah.
As I was reading the book, I found myself going, okay, is this real? Did this really happen? Or is this part of the story, you know, kind of like it would have happened but didn't? And so I think you probably succeeded pretty well in balancing the history and the story, the actual fictional part of the story, because there were some times where I was kind of going, wait a minute, is that real?
Almost everything that's historical in the novel is real. The main characters are not. But there are other characters in the story who are real people who I wove into the story. So it's them living out this fictional story in a very real setting.
You normally write historical fiction, romance. Is that your usual thing or do you just write what you feel like?
I have five other books out that were all kind of – they were contemporary romantic, almost romantic comedies. But this book I actually wrote 15 years ago. And
so it's not new.
It's not new, but it was the second book I wrote. And I always loved it. But at the time I wrote it, I didn't know a lot about the craft of writing a novel. And there is a craft to it. And so it was kind of a mess. So I put it away on a shelf and forgot about it for a long time. And 3 years ago I said, I'm going to pull that out and fix it. And we went to Ireland on a trip. And so that brought a lot of – seeing things real and seeing the country for the first time, and it just brought a lot of things home to me what I could do with the book. And so I pulled the book back out again and started to work on it. And I will tell you that it's harder to fix a broken book than it is to write a new book from scratch. So it was a lot of work. It took me 2 years until I was happy enough with it to put it out.
To actually say I'm going to publish
yes,
this. Yeah.
Right.
So are you Irish? Do you have an Irish?
I am Irish.
Yeah, okay.
Very Irish, both sides of my family, and grew up with this great family pride in being Irish from childhood on, and my grandfather going around the house singing Danny Boy and all sorts of Irish songs. And so great, great family pride, which is why I started out saying with my second book, I'm going to write a love story out of Ireland.
So when you go to Irish Fest mm-hmm. and you see all these people who are both Irish and not Irish celebrating Irish culture, what does that make? How does that make you feel? Is that just kind of feed into what you already got from your family?
I think it's just awesome that everybody wants to be Irish now. When you look back at the 1800s where people hated the Irish and said, no Irish need apply and stay away from me, you're dirty, you're an animal. I mean, they really thought of the Irish as the lowest common denominator. I think it's just amazing that the Irish have become so accepted that it's now something to be proud of. There are Irish fests all over the country. And St. Patrick's Day, everybody's Irish. And it's just, I think it's great that America has embraced its Irish heritage.
Any more books that you think that you'll set in Ireland now that you reworked this one? Are there other stories percolating?
There is. She has a brother in this story named Sean. And I have long had an idea for Sean's story in America. And I just have to sit down and research. And you know what happens when I do that.
I know. You it might be another 2 or 3 years.
Right, exactly. Right.
But let's hope, because Sean was an interesting character. And he obviously didn't play a major role in here, but he was a key role.
Right.
And so, and he has a fascinating story, too. So, well, I hope you'll come back when Sean is in his own book.
I would love to.
All right. Well, Pamela, it has been such a pleasure having you in the studio. The book is called To Ride a White Horse. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Walwatosa's Pamela Ford is the award-winning author of contemporary and historical romance. Her newest is To Ride a White Horse, which is set in Ireland and America during the Great Famine. She'll be discussing the book in the literary corner of Irish Fest this weekend. There's a link to more information at wuwm.com.